Welcome to Securing America with me, Frank Gaffney, the program that's a kind of owner's manual for protecting the country we love against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to the glory of God and his kingdom. China, of course, is top of mind, as is often the case when we talk about enemies foreign, well, and for that matter, domestic, in terms of what it is doing to undermine us here at home as well. We are very mindful at the moment of a lot of moving parts with respect to China, and we want to catch up with one of the most, I believe, thoughtful and carefully informed national security experts in this space, bar none. His name is Captain James Fennell, United States Navy retired. His last duty station in the Navy was Chief of Intelligence for the U.S. Pacific Fleet, and in that capacity, he raised considerable warnings of what was coming, in particular, a decade of concern that we now find ourselves very much in. He is these days a senior fellow of the Geneva Center for Security Policy, not to be confused with ours here in Washington, but a place that enables him to speak to and help the rest of us understand what is happening with respect to China, the implications for the region and for us and far beyond. Jim Fennell, it is great to have you back, sir. Welcome aboard once again.
Thanks, Frank. Great to see you again. Glad to be back.
Thank you. Jim, let me start by asking you, if I can, as a very accomplished intelligence professional, before we get to China specifically, what is your take on this dump of intelligence information, some of it apparently true and accurate, no kidding intelligence products, some of it not so clear, but it's roiling a lot of waters, I think, worldwide. What do you make of what's happened here and its implications?
Well, Frank, anytime that there's a leak of this kind of classified military intelligence, which clearly gives away U.S. national security interests, concerns, policy, sources and methods of intelligence collection, it's a devastating impact to the United States. And, you know, I think I've heard others say, and I would agree with them, that it's a treasonous act, whoever did this. But it's in a long line of this kind of leaking that we've had going back several, you know, one or two decades, where we have people in the government that are knowingly revealing data about the United States to this degree. And so my hope is that they find this person and that they are fully prosecuted to the full extent of the law, regardless of whatever political bent they have. The concern is now that they've revealed not only our intentions for how to defend the Ukraine, but they've, more importantly, they've damaged our alliance relationships with a number of countries. And so in the Middle East, there's been reports about Egypt and plans that they had to work with Russia. Clearly, that's of great concern. And then in the Pacific, there's been release of information about China and its intentions towards Taiwan, which I don't think is a surprise to anybody, but the fact that the level of analysis and depth of knowledge that we would have on that now has been revealed to the PRC, and so they have a better idea of what we know and don't know, and that gives them a chance to hide future intentions and activities, especially if they were going to do an invasion. And then there's also in South Korea, we have the president of South Korea coming over to visit the president in the White House in the next week here, and we've seen there was release of information about South Korea's consternation and concern about the events in the Ukraine and resupplying the Ukraine. So this is very destabilizing, very destructive. We have an administration that talks about the importance of alliances. That's good to talk about it. But when you allow this kind of information to be leaked out, it's damaging. It's absolutely devastating to alliance relationships, and it further erodes our credibility. It further erodes our credibility with our allies. And this is, you know, in continuation to what was released by Edward Snowden, what was released by Bradley Manning, and other traitorous people, even people that were in our own government that had classified servers in their own basements, in their homes. These are things that should not be allowed, or we had people in administrations that were caught leaving the National Archive, grabbing documents and shoving them in their socks. I'm not going to name names. We all know who they are. But it's this kind of activity has not been reprimanded, and people have not been held to account. And it's going to continue until somebody pays the price for it.
You've been around a long time, Jim, and you know that leakers mostly get away with what they've done. The thing that's particularly interesting and I guess vexing about this is it seems as though some of this information may not be accurate, may not have perhaps even been leaked by us, but may be reflecting information or disinformation operations by foreign powers. How do you assess that prospect?
It's very possible that this is some form of disinformation that's been collaborated with somebody on our inside, that to either the Russians or the Chinese, somebody that's intending to do all the things that I just said, which is to destabilize our alliance structure, because that's really the last. I mean, besides our raw military power, our alliance structure is a major strength of the United States. And if we lose allies, and you'll see just yesterday in China's Global Times, a big article about how America is now standing alone. It doesn't have any more allies and friends. And they reference French President Macron's statements following his trip to China. So I think there's a very great likelihood that this has been somehow coordinated with somebody, could be in China, could be in Russia, but it's being used to destabilize America and our strength and position. And that's why it has to be found out who did this. It has to be zeroed in, and there can't be just talk, can't have meetings. They have to have real investigations into this. So let's hope the Department of Justice gets their priorities straight.
Well, again, just your professional assessment is there's no doubt that there is an inside job feature to this, even if external forces may have been at work as well.
It sure looks like it based on somebody sent me two of the documents, which I don't want to have, but I saw them and they were essentially, pictures of folded up papers that looked to me to be authentic briefing book material that, our senior leaders in the Pentagon and our combatant commands around the world typically get a briefing every morning, an intelligence briefing that has, usually it's not always in soft copy, but sometimes it's in hard copy. And when it's in hard copy, it sure looked like somebody had grabbed it and just shoved it down their pants or something like that and walked out of the building. And as we've talked before, U.S. intelligence and the security system that we have is ultimately based on patriotism and trust. And so we have trust in our people, trust that they will, follow through with the rules and regulations for dealing with classified information, and will be, protecting it. And we know that not everybody does, but we have counterintelligence forces that are supposed to be rooting this out. And we trust that people that we bring into the system will guard it. And I think we're seeing now a lack of trust, a breakdown of that trust. We also have, as been talked about before, an overclassification. So we have a lot of classified stuff, and we're not following tried and true systems of security. For instance, you should only have access to information on a basis of need to know. Do you need to know this information? And with the electronic systems that we have today, there's many more people that are seeing things that they never would have seen 35 years ago or 30 years ago when I came in.
Jim, hold the thought. I want to come back to this issue of trust. It's vital, obviously. Jim Fennell, Captain, United States Navy, retired, is in the house. We'll be right back with more right after this.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The noose is tightening on freedom in America. Team Biden has been stealthily working to give the World Health Organization sweeping powers to unilaterally declare here public health emergencies of international concern and dictate how we'll respond. The WHO is the global entity that insisted on our locking down, masking up, and jabbing with inadequately tested so-called vaccines during the COVID pandemic. To help enforce its edicts, the WHO wants to require universal digital identification cards like those used in Communist China's totalitarian social credit system. Incredibly, the U.S. Senate recently agreed such arrangements could be imposed on us without its approval. Worse, it may soon adopt legislation requiring us to get digital IDs before the WHO does. Either way, we're headed for a digital gulag unless we say no. Find out how you can do that at sovereigntycoalition.org. This is Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We are visiting, and are privileged to be doing so, with one of the most distinguished naval intelligence officers of our time. His name is Captain James Fennell, United States Navy retired, former Chief of Intelligence for the U.S. Pacific Fleet. In that capacity and throughout his distinguished naval career and since, he has been focused intensively on the China threat and how it is metastasizing. And Jim, before we leave this topic of this intelligence dump and the damage that it's done, I did want to just ask this question because I think for national security professionals, it's clearly a problem, but I think most Americans don't fully appreciate how insidious it is. You talk about trust. You talk about insiders breaching that trust. You talk about people who have no need to know, having nonetheless access to information and disseminating it. I'm just constantly concerned that all of this breakdown, if you will, is reinforced, encouraged, catalyzed, maybe even rationalized by what people see the commander-in-chief doing or having done, him and his family. Namely Joe Biden, in the way of, well, betraying our country and now having, you know, security liabilities as a result of having done so that would keep anybody else not only from having security clearances, but, you know, from being at liberty. They would be in the brig. Could you just talk about that as a possible contributor to this kind of breakdown that you're talking about?
Well, I think we're seeing that across American society as a breakdown of institutions first. And second, I do think that the leadership of the President of the United States is the role model. And I always remember back to when I was a young officer joining the Navy, and we always knew that, you know, Ronald Reagan would never take his suit coat off inside the White House, inside the Oval Office. And so there was a...
Out of respect. Kind of for the office.
Respect to the office, respect to his job, and a constant reminder that he was serving not just for his own pleasure and influence, but he was serving for the rest of the nation. And we served that way in uniform. We were always taught and we practiced and we thought about what we were doing wasn't just for us on our ships that we were on or wherever we were at, but that we were doing this for the nation. And so we had a responsibility to treat the classified information with dignity and respect and to protect it and to make sure that it wasn't being compromised and risking our national security. And so when we have incidents with presidents that have had classified information, they're treated differently by the Constitution. But when one of these individuals wasn't a president, was a vice president, was a senator, and it appears that had classified information, That's a violation of the law. And so these need to be held to account as well.
And I couldn't agree more. And Jim, sadly, that is, as you say, happening across our society, institution after institution. It's not just the United States military. It just happens that it has particularly ominous implications for the breakdown of good order and discipline, as I think you say, in the military. That it's so evident there. Let me ask you, Jim, to pivot. You talked about ships a moment ago and your own experience at sea. You've been watching closely exercises that the Chinese Communist Party's People's Liberation Army has been conducting that clearly indicate their tactics and maybe strategy for conquering Taiwan, something Xi Jinping has made clear he's intent on doing. Give us a sense of how all of this is now shaping up in terms of the capabilities to do just that and the confidence that the Chinese military and leadership has that they can pull this off.
Yeah, Frank, I think, inside, on the U.S. side, there's a lot of folks that have doubted whether or not the PLA would have the capability to invade Taiwan. And I think that any leader like Xi Jinping would constantly be asking the Central Military Commission and the PLA to continue to reinforce the orders that he gave them a decade ago to be ready to take Taiwan as early as 2020. And Hu Jintao gave a similar order even earlier than Xi. So he's going to want to constantly have that reinforced and to understand what they're doing. And what I think has happened in the last 10 months is that last August, we saw with Speaker Pelosi's visit to Taiwan, we saw China, the ballistic missiles, launch 11 ballistic missiles surrounding Taiwan with a large number of aircraft and ships that surrounded Taiwan. And I think what we saw in August was the first phase. There's three key phases to any Taiwan invasion. The first one is a joint fire strike campaign where you isolate key political and military targets on the island through fires of missiles, from ballistic missiles from land and from the air and from the sea and under the sea. So that occurred, I think, in August. It wasn't characterized that in their press clippings, but what we saw them do, the biggest element was the ballistic missile firings. Now we just had this last weekend with the joint sword exercise that surrounded Taiwan again with air and naval forces to include an aircraft carrier. We saw a large number of aircraft come across from the mainland and from the carrier into Taiwan's airspace. And across the Taiwan Strait, we had literally over 100 aircraft in 3 days cross the center line. And if you recall, in the 60 years prior to 2020, that center line had only been crossed 4 times. And now it was crossed 100 times in just 3 days. So I think that was a demonstration of what they call the Joint Anti-Air Raid Campaign, which is to establish air superiority and then air supremacy over Taiwan to make sure that no Taiwan Air Force aircraft can fly or any other U.S. or Japanese aircraft can fly. So I think those two elements have been accomplished. I think the third element of this grand strategy to take Taiwan by military conquest is called the Joint Island Landing Campaign. And I estimate that in the fall, sometime between August and October, we will see another major exercise from the PLA where they will practice an invasion on their shores, but it'll be much larger than anything that we've seen. And it will include air and naval forces around Taiwan, like the last one, the last two, and will also include simulations and other things that demonstrate that they're piecing it all together. But the main thrust will be an invasion. And at that point, the Central Military Commission will be able to go to Xi and say, we've done all three major elements of a Taiwan invasion strategy, and we're now capable of doing this. All we have to do is increase the scale of activity in each one of these realms. And to be clear, these are the three major elements, but they're supporting efforts. There's joint logistics. There's joint information dominance. And in the press clippings this week about from the Chinese, they said the purpose of joint sword was to establish dominance at sea, in the air, and in the information domain. So part of this will be messing with our minds, showing us things that both in Taiwan and the United States that degrade our morale, mess up our computer systems, mess up our intelligence, confuse us. And this is all part of this strategy. And they're working on it together. And now this week, today, Xi is down in the southern province inspecting the PLA Navy again. So we've got, I think, a very short timeline. And I think what China will use is something like a Speaker McCarthy, if he follows through on his statement that he wants to go to Taiwan in the fall, China would use that then as an excuse to say, we're running this exercise, or this, we had to do this in response, but they're already planning to do it. And once it's completed, after the fall of 2023, a real live, real world invasion of Taiwan could occur by the PRC at any time.
Wow. Well, this is a prediction that we hope obviously will not be fulfilled. Jim, as is true of most of what you've been predicting for a long time, but sadly, your track record is excellent in making these estimations of Chinese capabilities and intentions. And we're going to talk on the other side of a final short break with Jim Fennell about where that leaves us and what we better be doing about it. We'll be right back with more on that right after this.
Night in cities across the country, black-garbed assailants clash with police in the streets, smash windows, and throw Molotov cocktails in an effort to destroy police stations, federal courthouses, and local businesses, all in the name of anti-fascism. Most Americans are now, sadly, all too aware of the movement known as Antifa. But where did they come from? What do they want? And how do we stop their campaign of violent mayhem? The Center for Security Policy Press is proud to present Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat. This new book looks at the history, ideology, organization, finances, and strategy of Antifa and provides an in-depth analysis for law enforcement officers, policymakers, and the general public. From street fighting tactics of the Black Bloc to fundraising by prominent left-wing foundations, Unmasking Antifa is the go-to guide to understand this elusive and dangerous threat. Get your copy of Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat at Amazon.com.
Welcome back. We are visiting with Captain James Fennell, a member of our Committee on the Present Danger, China, a retired naval officer of great renown and accomplishment, especially in the naval intelligence battle space. We've been talking with Jim about the Chinese preparations for violent conflict with and over Taiwan, and what it might mean for us is the topic to which I want to turn now. Jim, you've described a methodical approach that we've actually been able to see, observing their exercises and training maneuvers and the like. A question that we visit with you about with regularity, and I think has to be addressed yet again in this context, is, would you agree with our friend and colleague Rick Fisher, who was on yesterday's program, when he says that these sorts of operations to conquer Taiwan will assuredly involve attacks against not just other allies of ours in the region, but against U.S. forces in the region, yes, including Hawaii, but also he suggested very possibly involving so-called fifth column operations inside the continental United States itself. He mentioned the West Coast and the District of Columbia, Washington, D.C. as prime targets. Your thoughts on all of that?
Frank, I think it's entirely plausible, and we need to be considering that. Because the Chinese, once they pull this, make the decision to go or pull the lanyard, as they say, there will be no pulling back or turning back. And so this will be one of the most significant military decisions ever made by the PRC. And they'll want to make sure that they're completely successful in what they do. They'll try to mask, I think, activities in continental United States to make it look like something that they did not instigate or author. I think that's more likely. I think, for instance, on the West Coast, we have, you know, a lot of our naval bases in San Diego. Some kind of shipping accident or something that would block the channels to get outside of San Diego Harbor, that would, you know, could be arranged in some form or fashion, and they could plausibly deny that. I think that's what they would try to do. I'm really concerned, having served out in the Western Pacific, I'm really concerned about American forces that are in the region, and that they'll be in they will be targeted by PRC, PLA, weapons systems, ballistic missiles being shot, anti-carrier ballistic missiles shot at our large deck aircraft carriers and amphibious carriers, even our 7th Fleet Command ship on the USS Blue Ridge. So I think these are all things that we have to prepare for, realistically assess, or not assess, but be prepared for what happens when we lose the Ronald Reagan and it's struck by, you know, 10 or 12 DF-21s and DF-26s. And it goes to the bottom, and 5,000 or 6,000 American sailors are gone. What do we do about that? And how do we replace it? How do we prevent it from happening again? And how do we take the fight back to the Chinese? In what form and fashion? And so we don't have much time. And I think in terms of preparing ourselves, we need to do something to get ready to be supporting Taiwan now. There needs to be boatloads of all kinds of equipment going into Taiwan, and also food. They need to be stocking up on their food supplies and energy supplies. They need to have their own strategic reserve. And so, again, we're drawing down our strategic petroleum reserve, and we should not be doing that, one. And two, we should be helping Taiwan build up theirs and Japan's, because when this happens, China's going to want to isolate those two nations, those two island nations, which include our forces, and bring the fight bring people to their knees quickly as possible.
They're deadly serious about this. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And what you've suggested as a lesson of Ukraine, among other things, that you want to maximize the difficulty of the Chinese task by preparing forces on Taiwan and in the region to contend with these sorts of prospective, operations before they happen, not scramble to try to do something about it after. And I think your admonition about losing a carrier battle group is tremendously important. I know this isn't the first time you've warned about that, Jim, and I don't know if the Navy's done nearly enough to anticipate and contend with this challenge, particularly from these longer and longer range anti-ship ballistic missiles. Again, your warnings have gone unheeded for too long, and it's vital that they not be done so any longer. Jim, let me turn to one other point here with you. Again, drawing on your expertise as an intelligence officer, we all watched with shock and I think horror at the unmolested transit of much of our country by this intelligence collecting balloon a few months ago. We have been told recently that the Chinese extracted a great deal of information in the course of that transit, that it was sent back in real time to Beijing, and that it may have given them some unique insights into our signal intelligence and operations and maybe facilities, both military and other critical infrastructure, perhaps, that they wouldn't necessarily have gotten, certainly not with the same fidelity, from satellites, or maybe even people on the ground, for that matter. What is your current assessment, Captain Fennell, of this particular incident and the lessons that we should be learning from it?
Well, Frank, this entire fiasco with the balloon is just incomprehensible to me that this occurred, especially since it came from mainland China and flew across the Pacific Ocean, or a large portion of it, and flew into our Alaskan Air Defense Identification Zone, the fact that we didn't, monitor it and track it and then be able to shoot it down as soon as it crossed into territorial airspace, it just seems hard to comprehend, especially since we were in a NORAD exercise at the time that was designed just to do that, which was to intercept and, defeat invading air forces in Alaska. So I don't understand it, one. Two, in terms of the intelligence take, as I said from the very beginning, when there were people saying that they didn't collect anything, it was incomprehensible that someone could say that. And there were statements made that said that this couldn't have provided any additional information from what we normally get from satellites. And that's just shows a fundamental lack of either you're a complete liar or you have no knowledge and understanding of intelligence collection systems. Satellites fly at, low Earth orbit, middle Earth orbit, high Earth orbit, thousands of miles above the surface of the Earth. They go in elliptical patterns. Some are sun synchronous, some are not. But when they fly and they go by, their dwell over a certain portion of the globe is very brief and fleeting. When you have a balloon that's essentially sitting on top of an area for days at a time, you're collecting, compared to a thimble full of data, you're collecting an ocean full of data. And when you have that ocean full of data, it allows you to do things that you couldn't do with just snippets and pieces. And so if I give the analogy back to World War II and the Battle of Midway, we could sometimes translate and break Japanese naval codes, maybe 30% of it. But we were collecting a lot of their radio communications. We couldn't see what was in it, but because of the volume of traffic, we could do what they call traffic analysis. And so we could understand the patterns of who was talking to who, what their chain of command was, where the scope of the operations were. And that's just a rudimentary example from 80 years ago. Today, when you have a satellite that's got a collection platform that's the size of three buses, that's collecting, literally whatever is the word above terabytes, zillions bytes of data, the amount of information that they can then, and it was, now we've learned from even the admissions that came out of the NBC report, that this was being in real time transferred back to the PRC to go into their supercomputers. They're able to break into things that we could have never imagined before, not just military, banking, everything, critical infrastructure. And so we're at great risk right now from what they were able to collect. And this is just incomprehensible that we allowed this to occur.
Well, we've been lied to about it as well, Jim, as you know, at the time and since. And to your point about them hovering over sensitive facilities and hoovering up immense quantities of data, we've learned in the course of the past revelations that they were doing figure eights to stay in place over those targets, a capability that was not at least initially credited to them and, again, misrepresented, I think, to the rest of us. Jim Fennell, thank you so much for today's insights. The time always flies by and we don't get to cover nearly as much as I'd like, but what we did cover, you did, as always, handsomely. I'm especially appreciative of the corporate memory that you're bringing to bear in terms of not only assessing present past in which we find ourselves, but also the way ahead. God bless you, my friend. Keep up the good work at the Geneva Center for Security Policy, and not least in your Red Storm Rising distributions. We appreciate them tremendously. We'll talk with you again very soon. We'll be right back with more right after this.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The noose is tightening on freedom in America. Team Biden has been stealthily working to give the World Health Organization sweeping powers to unilaterally declare here public health emergencies of international concern and dictate how we'll respond. The WHO is the global entity that insisted on our locking down, masking up, and jabbing with inadequately tested so-called vaccines during the COVID pandemic. To help enforce its edicts, the WHO wants to require universal digital identification cards like those used in Communist China's totalitarian social credit system. Incredibly, the U.S. Senate recently agreed such arrangements could be imposed on us without its approval. Worse, it may soon adopt legislation requiring us to get digital IDs before the WHO does. Either way, we're headed for a digital gulag unless we say no. Find out how you can do that at sovereigntycoalition.org. This is Frank Gaffney.
We're back, and I'm very pleased to say we're joined by another one of our duty experts on matters involving the United States military and the challenges to it and to our country more generally, another member of our Committee on the Present Danger, China. His name is Colonel John Mills, United States Army retired, a man I'm proud to say is these days a senior fellow of our Center for Security Policy, as well as the author of a very important book, The Nation Will Follow. We're delighted to have a chance to visit with him always, but especially at a time such as this. Colonel Mills, it's great to have you with us. Welcome once again, sir.
Hey, thank you, Frank. Always an honor to be on your show with you.
Thank you. Let me just pick up on kind of points that were raised in the course of my conversation just now with another 06, as we call them, former captain in the United States Navy, James Fennell, specifically about Taiwan, John, and you've spent a lot of your time, both I think in uniform and subsequent to it in senior positions in the Defense Department and the National Security Council and elsewhere, and certainly as a very important member of our committee, focused on what needs to be done to assure Taiwan's continued independence from the mainland and survival, for that matter. Give us, before we get into some of the things that need to be done and to some extent are beginning to be done, happily, talk a little bit about the strategic significance of this island as you see it.
Well, three things are in play, Frank. First, we do have a treaty with Taiwan, the 1979 Taiwan Relations Act, that we will defend them against essentially hostilities and coercion. It's also been significantly upgraded with the Taiwan Travel Act and then in the 2023 National Defense Authorization Act. So to distinguish it from the Ukraine, we have very clear treaties. And now with the 2023 NDA, we have a World War II style lend-lease program going on. So very significant. Two, just to be practical, we about an 80% chance that every viewer is dependent upon the chips that are 80% made in Taiwan. So if you bought a car, computer IT products, very likely 80% chance those chips came from Taiwan, which the Chinese need. Now three,
and these are not just run-of-the-mill chips. These are the best.
Yeah, these are the most advanced. They dominate world production. And third, for the Chinese to make their move, they're going to have to suppress by fire American sovereign territory. These are American citizens in Guam, Tinian, and Saipan, and very likely Hawaii. I have a lot of relatives in Hawaii. Everybody needs to take this personal. So everybody's saying, this has nothing to do with us. This is the front line of freedom for all of us. This is very different than Ukraine. But what's
And John, would you agree with Rick Fisher, one of our other Committee on the Present Danger China members, who said on this program yesterday that for the Chinese essentially to move on their broader world hegemony agenda, they need to have Taiwan in their hands and basically be able to project power from it. So in that sense, that strategic analysis is something you would agree with?
Absolutely. And this is what's going on is almost exactly as the Committee on Present Danger China has projected as far as 2 years ago when we've generated white paper after white paper, webinar after webinar talking. And it's almost played out exactly as we postulated and warned. And right now, they just wrapped up the Chinese, probably their largest, I would call it aggression against Taiwan, air and sea, close to 100 aircraft, dozens of ships challenging their sovereign airspace and territorial waters. Now, the U.S. has also had the carrier Nimitz and their battle group, and close by, with an integrated Japanese and South Korean naval forces, as well as close by the Macon Amphibious Readiness Group, essentially a small, medium-sized carrier, also integrated with Japan and South Korea. This is very important. And right now, the United States has identified the four bases in the Philippines. And Army will be shortly putting in the Navy. The Army has accepted the Navy missiles, the SM-6 hypersonic missile, and the Tomahawk ground base. They're going to put them on trailers. They're going to put these missiles on trailers, and they're going to base them at the north of the Philippines. And we're having the largest exercise ever right now with the Philippines. 12,000 American troops have landed in the Philippines and are establishing. And I know I was alerted to this by some of the members who are actually landing. We also are placing these missiles on Ishigaka, the Japanese islands, right behind the top end. So we're securing the left and right shoulders of Taiwan as we speak.
And John, to the extent that we're taking these steps and that they're not piecemeal, but they bespeak a more concerted strategic approach to the problem, how is that being received, do you think, in Beijing at the moment? Is this having the effect that we were arguing it should to enhance deterrence?
I think it is. We have it's not a secret, but it's you got to look for it closely to find evidence of it. But we've had special operators conducting training on the ground since the Obama days, and it's accelerated during Trump and even during Biden. Because the coastal plain on Taiwan facing may be able to land relatively easily. They'll lose a lot. But most of Taiwan is mountainous to the east. Most of it is mountainous. And that's the fallback. And that's what the special operators are training the Taiwanese on. We also, just as the committee recommended 2 years ago, there are advanced force elements of a tripwire brigade on the ground in Taiwan now. So
this is really important. And we're going to talk more on the other side of a very short break with John Mills about why it is. And more to the point, what else can and do we need to be doing at the moment to, yes, impact China's deterrence calculus as to whether this is worth going to war over or not? John Mills, United States Army Colonel, retired, author of The Nation Will Follow. Back with more right after this. Welcome back. Colonel John Mills, United States Army retired, a special operator with a background in psychological warfare, is the perfect guy to be talking about How do we affect the deterrence calculus of China as it seems increasingly not only intent on conquering Taiwan, about that there's no mistake, but increasingly capable of doing so? And John, it's been very helpful. I mean, I give you a lot of credit for the sort of seminal work you did for the committee, laying out these kinds of tactical steps, if you will, to try to impact Chinese thinking about the advisability of going after this porcupine, as it's been called. And I'm you know, heartened to hear that some of the things that we've been recommending are being taken to heart and implemented. The question that I guess occurs is it enough? And if not, what else should we be doing in addition to the tripwire on Taiwan and some training there and, you know, the exercises in the Philippines and deployment of missiles that might be relevant to the fight in the Western Pacific?
Well, I mean, very demonstrative forward movement of logistics to support war plans. As we see the leak out of the administration, and thank God I'm not inside government now, having to deal, as I had to deal with Manning, Snowden, and then Office of Personnel Management, the horrible leak that's going on. God bless DOD CIO, Mr. Sherman, who's having to deal with cleanup right now on this. We need to move or.
This is the dump of a lot of sensitive information that we were talking about with Jim Fennell a few minutes
yeah.
ago.
Yeah, so it's moving ordnance forward. And one of the things is sea mines. We have to accelerate production of and forward movement of and start emplacing sea mines. Now, this is kind of a lost and forgotten art form, but we need to pull out a war reserve. We got a lot of stockages of these in Hawaii and the West Coast, and start moving these forward and start them placing. These are not, you know, cartoonish simple mines, you know, that ball with spikes on it. These are far more sophisticated. Oftentimes these are encapsulated torpedoes. They're smart torpedoes that essentially lie in wait. And we need to start, this is just conceptual and notional, this is not DOD position, but start emplacing these mines to the north and to the south to essentially force the Chinese, if they're going to make a run at Taiwan, they only can come at them straight across. You want to block the north, you want to block the south to the Taiwan Straits. So the Chinese have no choice but to come straight across. And their bases straight across are not those are not their bigger bases. They're not good logistics cantonment areas to prep for an invasion. Actually, it's the bases further to the south and further to the north, which we want to cut off and isolate. Again, we have a very strong Korean and Japanese Navy that are, I'm surprised at how closely they're working together. Getting the Koreans and Japanese traditionally has been a little difficult. They are working very closely with each other now.
Well, John, as I know you believe very strongly, elections have consequences. And I think what we've seen both in Japan and South Korea, and most notably perhaps in the Philippines, is, you know, coming to power of presidents in each of those countries or prime ministers that are very much aligned with the United States and willing to work with each other, even though there's been some hard history in the past, obviously. And partly that, John, that's because there's a shared appreciation of just how serious the danger has become, and in particular, how vital it is to each of these countries that, you know, we not lose Taiwan to the Chinese ambitions. John, speaking of Chinese ambitions, let me just pivot to one other thing that I know you have followed in your career inside the U.S. government. That's an outfit called the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States. And I think we've talked about this before. I've been frustrated with them since I was in the Pentagon a long time ago, because it's run by the Treasury Department. And by definition, the Treasury Department has really never seen a foreign investment in the United States that they didn't approve of. So the sort of national security mindedness that this committee is supposed to bring is always kind of offset by the pro-investment attitudes of the Treasury Department. of particular concern to me, John, is the practice that the Chinese have been engaged in, as you know, in buying up farmland or other real estate, sometimes in proximity to strategic, you know, assets of ours. Grand Forks in North Dakota comes to mind. There's also a large piece of land that's not necessarily near a base, but it's strategically located in the heartland of the United States in Big Rapids, Michigan. And we're just talking about the advisability of having a huge plant in this pristine rural environment in the United States, subsidized no less by $715 million in taxpayer subventions. I don't know if you've looked at this, John, but it just infuriates me that the people on the ground there were saying they're getting no help at all, not from, you know, the federal government, not from their local government, not from their state government. But in particular, they've appealed to CFIUS, as it's called, to, you know, take a look at this and see if this is, in fact, something that would be consistent with our national security interests. Your thoughts about whether CFIUS is doing this job and doing what it needs to do in that regard?
I put out an article a number of months ago in Epoch Times about this topic and talked at length with Ambassador Hoekstra about it. Problem in Michigan, first and foremost, is the governor. And Governor Whitmer, the tentacles of the CCP are all over Whitmer. We all know what a tyrannical governor she is. And this is where other bodies, it's counties, just as in my book, it's county groups need to petition CFIUS directly. The Committee on Foreign Investment, further codified in 2018 Federal Investment Risk Review Modernization Act. And this is an example of, now land buys are still loopholes. They need to address this because the Chinese read our laws, our legislators don't.
That's the big problem. Our legislators don't even read their own laws. John, I'm sorry to say we're out of time. This is a topic to which I hope we can return to with you in the very near future. But thank you for your expertise on all these matters and your leadership in our Committee on the Present Danger of China. God bless you, my friend. Thanks to the rest of you for joining us for this edition of Securing America. I hope you'll join us next time. Until then, go forth and multiply.